listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com, seeking solutions.
You are all about to get on this record. Getting to be a strange place. A lot of crazy things are happening. A lot of questions need to be asked. A lot of puzzles need to be put together. And here are all the pieces that you're going to get from one man right here on The Big Puzzle with your host, the one and only man from Canada, Mr. Barry Ritz.
Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to the Sunday edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and also being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. Thanks for joining in today, and as always, guys, we are viewer-supported stations, so if you like what we're doing and you want to help out a little bit, I know the operators of the stations would appreciate any kind of help that you can muster. I know times are tough right now, but I believe what these stations are bringing forward is essential. So please, if you can help out, don't be shy. And always like to thank my producer, Steve Roberts, for putting up with me every week and setting up my shows for me. Much appreciated. My guest, I haven't had Mark. Steve just told me before we started here that I haven't had Mark on the radio now for about 6 months. I am joined by Mark Friesen, who was a PPC candidate for Saskatoon in Saskatchewan, in Canada, and in the last federal election. And looking forward to my conversation with Mark today. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Barry. Has it been that long?
That's what Steve was telling me. It's 6 months. It doesn't seem like that. I thought we were on a while ago, but
you had him
that's
on,
what he's telling me.
You haven't had him on Skype in 6 months.
Okay. Well, maybe we're on.
Must just been the phone number.
Yeah. Okay. But anyways, welcome to the show there, Mark. And
yeah, thanks for having me, Barry.
Yeah, you know what, Mark? This is one of these days. I don't know if you experience days like this, but I kind of look at everything that's going on right now in my country and around the world, and it really, it's almost like it's got you into a state of almost unbelievable distractions. And what's the word I'm looking for? I kind of look at everything going on right now, and I keep asking myself, well, what's it going to take for the general population to wake up to what's going on in our world right now? It is so in our face, and today I'm just asking myself that question, Mark. Maybe you could answer that question for me.
I can't.
I'm looking for an answer, Mark, because I'm searching.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I have every day is one of those days for me. It used to be, you know, ebbs and flows, sort of, and now it seems to be throughout the day it's ebbs and flows. I try to take a little step back and look at it from a 30,000-foot view, and I get a little bit more encouraged when I do that. I'm seeing countries around the world that are rising. You know, I've seen a huge protest in South Korea. I've seen enormous protests in Spain. I'm seeing protests in one planned in Germany on the 29th and the UK as well. And I'm hearing Australia is finally going to step up. I'm seeing this, and even in Canada, I mean, if you look at the French, they're doing amazing things. They're putting together, you know, 40,000-50,000 people in the street again this weekend. So,
yeah,
you know, it's happening. It's happening. Canadians are woefully apathetic, and we're sheep, and we follow. So we're, you know, unfortunately, on a collective basis, and I hate that word, but that's kind of the way we are. There's a lot of us that aren't like that would like to see the people rise and stand to this crap, you know, en masse right now. It's just, you know, like, we just got to keep pounding the pavement, be there when the masses wake up. And I've said it for a long time, Barry, you know, it's going to be a natural progression in relation, direct relation to the consequences of globalism. Of course, COVID has sped that whole agenda up. They're using COVID to take advantage, but also it's an opportunity for us to use it and take advantage and show people why these things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's frustrating, though, because I was just at the mall, and, you know, there I watch, you know, everybody's, well, not everybody, but almost everybody's masked up, and it's just zombies just walking through life, being told what to do and what to put on their face. And so it's frustrating, but I'm seeing us turn a corner. And I think, again, it's in relation to the consequences that globalism is creating for us. So it'll happen. It's just a matter of time.
I got to agree with Mark that I am starting to see people, normal people in my community that are really starting to pay attention. And they're engaging in conversations. Some of them I've never been able to engage in conversations with before, now starting to engage. But we really are kind of up against the wall right now, my friend. We don't have a lot of time to fix what's going on right now in our country. I honestly believe that we're kind of getting too close to a pinnacle point where if we don't correct it, the powers to be are going to have such control over our country that we might not be able to stop what's going to come. If we don't stop what's coming, you know what's coming. Mark, you know what's coming, and I know what's coming. What's coming, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
I don't disagree whatsoever, Barry. We are at a critical time. And you know, the time to rise is right now. And so, you know, I just got to keep doing what I do, and you got to keep doing what you're doing, and so many other people are stepping up. And one of the things that I've seen is sort of indicative is I'm getting contacted by people that aren't in my circle, that aren't, you know, they don't even know who I am, but people are sending them, you know, a friend of a friend is, you know, mentioning my name, and this is locally, and they're asking what we can do. And so that's encouraging, because now people outside the echo chamber, outside the circle, are starting to ask questions and ask what they can do. So that's, you know, that's a sign that that more people are starting to wake up. So, you know, I have no choice but to have hope that at some point the masses will rise and wake. I mean, you know, either that or I just give up and go move into the bush somewhere and ignore it all.
I bet you there's days you feel like doing that, Mark, because I know there's days I feel like doing that. There's days I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall, but then somebody will say something to me encouraging, and it changes my attitude. And I know I can't take my foot off the gas, buddy. We are in a very, very bad time right now. We've been talking about, in the last 7 or 8 years, Mark, and shows, we've talked about exactly what's going to happen. We all knew that this was coming at a certain point, that they were really going to unleash chaos in society, and now it's here. And the scariest part that I see, buddy, is that the majority, or not the majority, but a good part of Canadian people are still following mainstream media, watching CBC at night, drinking the Kool-Aid, and going to bed. And what it's going to take to get them to actually look at other information. Well, the problem is that all that other information is now being quashed. Anything against the narrative is immediately being taken down. So it's very hard for people to actually get information now. I'm being censored like crazy now, Mark, and I've never seen that before. And I'm sure you're experiencing the same thing.
Yeah, I am, absolutely. And, you know, I think even a lot of the cases really is that people aren't even paying attention. Like, never mind, you know, listening to CBC or the mainstream news. I think there's just a lot of people that have tuned it all out. You know, they live in this bubble that they, you know, that they feel comfortable and secure in. And if they listen to anybody, then there's not, you know, that the chances are that that bubble's going to be burst. So, you know, it's basically, you know, their own sense of self-preservation by just ignoring it. Of course, that never works and that won't work, but I think that's a lot of the case. I think people are just, you know, in their own bubble, and they want to make sure that they live in that bubble for as long as possible. That bubble will be burst, whether it's getting information for us or realizing the consequences of what's coming down. I mean, it's inevitable. So, you know, we just have to keep powering on and keep powering through and be there when you know, everybody has to feel this directly. It's that's kind of the way our society has moved toward. There's so much less community. It's all about, you know, individual families and their own little bubbles they're in. Once they're affected directly by this, and they're starting to feel it, and they're starting to see it, you know, they're gonna be looking for answers. They're gonna be, you know, and unfortunately, the rest of us are sort of, you know, being held hostage by their inactivity, and we're frustrated, and we want them to wake. We just have to just be there when they do wake.
Yeah, the most frustrating part about it, Mark, now there's no hiding what's going on. You know, back in the days when we had secret societies and the Bilderberg groups, and they were all meeting behind closed doors, and nobody really knew kind of what was going on. They knew there was people there that kind of, you know, weren't very good guys, and they might be having some odd meetings that weren't quite what we expect out of people, but it was never out in the face of the public, and now it is right in your face that we have a prime minister in this country that has absolutely just snuffed his nose at the law. The law does not apply to our prime minister in this country right now in any shape or form. And what do you have when you have that situation? You have a full-blown fascist dictatorship in your face, and people can't see it, Mark. If they can see it, then they refuse to do something about it. And that's the part that really bothers me the most, period. Because, like I said, what's coming, buddy? What's coming? You know, I don't want no part of that. None. And like, I'm sure you feel the same way, but you're not going to die on your knees. Go ahead.
You know, we grew up in a time where, you know, a lot of us ask, how could the Nazis have ever gotten power? How could the communists have ever gotten power? How could anyone have let that get to the point that it got to? And that was a question we all asked. Well, now we're living it. Now we're seeing exactly how the fascists and the communists were able to gain power throughout history. We're living it. We're right in the middle of it right now. We're watching it, why that happened then and why it's happening now. And, this whole sense of denial that people want to live in, that it can't happen here, and, oh, you're overreacting, you're exaggerating, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're this, that, and the other thing. But as you say, I mean, it's gotten to the point, Barry, where I have absolutely zero opposition on my Facebook or Twitter, because anybody who opposes what I'm saying is made to look like a fool, because they have no arguments. They have nothing to justify their inactivity or their ignorance. So they just go away. Once you hit them with one, you know, piece of information, and they're gone. And there's no even discussion, because, they understand, they see it, they feel it, that their little bubble's going to be burst if they carry on with this conversation anymore. Yeah. So they ignore it. They just deny it and put their head in the sand and hope it'll all go away. And it won't. So, you know, sooner or later, it's going to be unavoidable. Ignorance won't be bliss anymore.
Well, you know, when the bubble bursts, Mark, it's going to be bad. You know, it's going to hit society. It is going to hit society in ways that they never, ever thought possible. And, of course, out of that will come chaos. And out of chaos always comes control. You can see the agenda being played out right in front of our eyes. We see how much money the government of this country has borrowed in the last 6 months. They have doubled our debt in 6 months, Mark. Well, you know, and I know that can't continue, that we're being set up to collapse. This whole economic charade is a charade, and eventually they're going to take a little pin and they're going to prick that bubble, and the whole thing will blow up in front of our faces. And boy, you want to see chaos in society, Mark. Holy man, it'd be a good movie. Well, they have made a movie. It's called 1984. And Mark, what's going on in Canada right now is an exact duplicate, folks, of what was going on in Germany in 1935, 1936, and 1937. Go study it, and you will see the comparisons are undeniable. Same agenda, same manifest being played out, Mark. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're 100% right. And, what can you say? You know, here we are, and we've been talking about all these things. I've been talking about it for probably 10, 15, 20 years. And, you know, to deaf ears. And, I mean, now there's a whole lot more people waking up to it. But even still, Bear, I mean, even the people that have been sort of, you know, nudged a little bit because of particular issues. So whether it's pipelines and blockades and any issue, name it. then they want to protest that particular issue, but they don't understand. And the pipelines is a really good example. It's, you know, a lot of folks in Alberta and Saskatchewan depend on it. It's their livelihood. And I understand, of course, that that's going to be your issue. And that's what you, the issue that you're going to, you know, the hill to die on. But even those people haven't understood that it's part of a bigger agenda, that it's a byproduct of a bigger agenda. And so, you know, you try to convince even those people that, you know, I get it, but you got to look at the bigger picture, because you're not going to solve the issues of the energy, the attack on energy and pipelines. You're not going to resolve it by just protesting pipelines and the energy industry. You have to look bigger. You have to cut off the head of the snake in order to fix that problem and every other problem that we have in Canada. Of course, you mentioned the debt. Well, that's obviously, listen, for I don't know how many years they've been telling us, like Christiana Figueres coming out of the IPCC a while back, a number of years ago, she said plainly that they need to destroy capitalism and replace it with socialism and a new system and a new economic system and destroy the industrialized world, essentially destroy the Western world, Western civilization, the best civilization humanity has ever known. And they want to destroy it. They've told us that. Maurice Strong and the Club of Rome back in, you know, late 60s, early 70s, you know, sponsored by the Rothschilds and Rockefellers, they told us that's their plan. This is what they want to do. They want to destroy capitalism as it is in the free market, and they want to have this technocracy. And how do they do that? Through social engineering. And that's exactly what they've been doing for 30, 40, 50 years. And so, you know, people have to get out of their own, you know, bubbles and their own causes to understand that this is a much bigger plan. You know, ultimately, they do want to destroy the economy and destroy this system that, you know, industrialized world has been in for 150 years and change to this technocracy and under global governance and the destruction of the nation state. They've told us this, Barry. You know it. I know it. And many others know it. And you show this to people and they still, you know, they go into denial. No, come on, that's not real. Well, of course it's real. And you're watching it in real time. Like even COVID, you know, I see so many people, and it's a good thing that they're waking up to what's happening based on the reaction to the plandemic and all of these restrictions and regulations and laws and whatever else they're coming down with. But it's still, you know, I have to look at it from this 30,000 foot view that this is just a mechanism. The plandemic is a mechanism for them to achieve their goals, their greater goals. And that is the destruction of the economy, redistribution of wealth, the destruction of Western civilization and the first world, and making all countries equal across the board, which means equally poor and easily controlled from a global perspective. And that's, you know, that's it. That's what's happening. So people really have to, even with this masks, and it's not about masks. It's not about just vaccines. That's a big part of it. And they've told us in that respect, too, when it comes to vaccines, that the vaccines are related to 14 of the 17 goals of sustainable development. Well, they're telling us this. And so when you repeat it, people tell us we're
nuts. Well, sorry, you got me laughing there. You only need to look in the Denver airport. You only need to look in the Denver airport, 1994 mural put in there, to see what they were bringing forward in 2020. They got a mural in there, Mark, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it's got about 50 or 60 children from around the world with all masks on of different countries. And this was put, I think it was 1994. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's when that mural was put forward. So that's how long they've had this plan in effect. Go ahead. It's been going on for years, folks. We didn't get to where we are as a society overnight. They've been slowly but surely taking away our freedoms and are adjusting the way we look at life slowly but surely over the last, I see the real changes in the last 40, 50 years, Mark. And, you know, these kind of changes in society, well, if, you know, if we could go back in time, Mark, and I say this to people a lot, if I could go back to 1960 right now and had on TV what we have on TV today, I know that every parent in Canada would be screaming at the top of their lungs, not maybe with the exception of a few, but the vast majority, I would say 95% of Canadians would be up in arms and be ready to kill the producers at CBC and CTV the next day. They'd be marching the streets with pitchforks. And now What do we hear? Everything that was good is now turned into bad. Everything that's bad is now turned into good. And that didn't happen overnight, folks. They slowly but surely take a piece here, take a piece there, and all of a sudden they've got a mile. Go ahead.
But here's the thing, Barry. Here's where I get hope, because everything that they're doing, this whole agenda, this whole upside down world they're creating, has no foundation. It's a swampy, mushy foundation that requires enormous propaganda, enormous perception agenda instead of reality, and it's by nature it's not going to work. It goes against natural law, I believe. And so once it's pushed to levels that affect everybody negatively, it's going to fail. The people that are sitting on the granite foundation are myself and many others who have a moral backing and a moral standard that it won't work. For that, their agenda will not work because it goes against natural law. And I truly believe that. And I believe humanity will fight back, and humanity at some point will win. It's just a matter of when that's going to be and how bad it's going to get before we get there. You know, the war has started. We're in a war. And, you know, so far there's only a few of us standing on the front lines. But that number is going to grow. It's going to be a natural progression, and we will get there, and eventually we'll win, but it's going to be really bad before we do.
I would have to agree with you, Mark. You know, being a person of faith, that exactly what my Bible tells us is going to happen. So I honestly believe we're going to see some bad times before we see good times. And that's a conversation for another day. But, yeah, we are – I believe what you said is correct, that it's going to take things that are actually really going to implement or impact Canadians in ways that they haven't been affected before. We'll get them to the point where they all of a sudden start having the conversations at the dinner table that we need to have right now. I see a lot of people now, Mark, I have been encouraged here in the last little while. And, you know, it's a good thing that I've had conversations now with people, just like mushroom picking guys and normal guys that are working a job are really starting to engage in conversations. And of course, it gives you an opportunity to provide them with a couple more points that they weren't aware of. But if those points happen to support what they're talking about, it sends them on another journey. And I'm seeing that with people now. So right now, like, buddy, the only thing we can do is just keep our foot to the floor. You know, there's going to be lots of people that don't get it, but I believe that more people that don't get it are going to get it here very, very shortly. At least I hope so. If not, we're going to lose this thing, Mark. And boy, I'll tell you, I don't even want to think about that. I really don't want to think that kind of future for my family or my grandchildren and my kids that are growing up in this country. Now, I had a great life growing up in this country. It was a great place to grow up, and now I see it being turned into shambles. We can't let that go, guys. We can't. It's our duty to stand up to this, Mark. I don't know how else to say it to people. It really is. You know, it's not like we have a choice. When you really start to realize, you know, what's coming, you have to be compelled to act. And that's a question I ask myself. You know, it's so obvious now that we're seeing catastrophic changes in our society, and yet we still hear crickets from the majority. So that's a good question.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I just have to look. I look into my neighborhood and I watch, you know, my neighbors that I know, and I, you know, we all get along and like each other. And, you know, across the street, there's a family of four, and, you know, they still have their cabin and they still have their recreation. And you know, so they don't look at the bigger picture. They just take advantage of what's still available to them. And, you know, there's lots of people. I just look through my neighborhood and, you know, people just don't want to see the bigger picture. They have their little comfort zone, their little bubble they're in. But, you know, that bubble's going to be burst. And when that bubble's burst, Barry, you know, we'll be in that leadership position. We'll be leading the fight as we are now. And it's going to happen. Like I said, it all of this whole agenda goes against natural law. I just don't believe it has the foundation to succeed. And again, that's why they need the propaganda. That's why they've taken 50 years to develop and create this agenda. It's enormous, but it's easily fixed. because, again, we stand on that solid foundation. They're on mushy foundation. And I think ultimately we win, but it's going to be a lot of pain before the end.
Your thoughts there, Mark, on Trudeau's propagating Parliament this week?
Yeah, proroguing, yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I have a hard time with that word, buddy, but
yeah.
Go ahead. I want your thoughts on that.
Well, of course he prorogued it. Of course it's his way to get out from under this whole Wee scandal and you know, their own little reset. Of course they bring Freeland in as now the finance minister, which is, you know, a natural, of course, development. But she's the perfect entity to, you know, or puppet, I should really call it, to take this to the next step. I mean, they're talking about spending even more money. I mean, if this isn't indicative and if this isn't evidence that they want to completely destroy our economy and start over with the Great Reset, I mean, I don't know what is. And, you know, so this whole proroguing, you know, people ask me, and again, last night we talked about it with Salim, you know, whether there's going to be an election in the fall. And I really don't see it. Why would they want an election? They're doing everything they want to do anyway. You know, the NDP has no money. They're actually in debt, I don't know, $10 or $18 million, whatever it is. They can't afford to run an election. And, I mean, the Liberals are doing everything that the NDP could want and more. And, I mean, at the end of the day, I really truly believe it's all theater. It's all kabuki theater. It's just, you know, whether it's the Conservatives, Liberals, NDP, Greens, they're all on board. They're all committed to the agenda. It's just, you know, they tweak it here or tweak it there to make themselves look like they're different than the other. They're all the same. So do I see an election coming? I don't. I don't believe there will be one. They don't need to have one. And, you know, I mean, again, do they really care if there's a party change? Well, ultimately, no, because the Laurentian elite from every party is just doing the bidding of the globalists. They're fully committed to what the globalist agenda is. So does it really matter to the elite of the parties of who's ruling? I don't really think so. I think it's all just... It's all just smoke and mirrors.
Just another day at the office.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy.
Love it, but it is sad.
It's amazing. It's amazing. We live in amazing and interesting times, Barry.
Well, you know, Mark, I didn't think, honestly, in my lifetime I'd ever be able to say that, you know, I'm in fear right now for the future of the country, but I really am. And I'm just praying. I'm just praying that that people will hear maybe the urgency in our voices when we talk about this, that, you know, we don't have a choice. If you love your children and you love your freedoms, then I challenge you to defy the fact that it is your duty right now to stand up, not to sit back, not to hide behind your keyboard, but to actually get involved. Get into your politician's face. They hate that, Mark. They hate being called, and I know Taylor Baccarat has had a lot of calls up here lately. Go ahead.
Well, no, and that's it. And you know, I mean, that's why I really think, you know, we really need to boil it down. We need to boil it down to basic values that, you know, 90% of Canadians share. And those are the values of freedom, liberty, justice, equality under the law, you know, tolerance, compassion, responsibility. You know, those are things, Barry, that if you sat down with anybody in your neighborhood, if you sat down with anyone in your community, you could all agree that those basic fundamental values are what we all share. And that's what we have to unite around to defend, because those are the things that are 100% under attack. Those are the things that the globalists need to destroy to achieve their goals. And this is why I say that, you know, naturally there's going to be a shift, because people, you know, when those core values are seen to be under attack and people are feeling those values under attack, they won't accept it. I mean, there'll be some that do regardless. There'll be, you know, that's just human nature. But the vast majority, I believe, once they understand that those core values are under attack, then we will unite to defend those core values, regardless of all our other differences and all the other divisions that the establishment has tried to wedge in. It'll boil down to those. We'll unite, and we'll unite to defend those values against a common enemy. And that common enemy are the globalists. The common enemy is the globalist agenda, the Great Reset, whatever you want to call it. And we'll win. But until then, you know, again, you know, we just have to keep doing what we're doing and educate. But, you know, ultimately, we will unite regardless of all our division. And we'll defend it. It's just a matter of how bad it's going to get before we do.
So what? Tell me what's up your sleeve here for Ottawa coming up here in the next little while. A couple things going on. Let's talk about that for a few minutes, Mark.
Yeah. So you know, I've been dealing with this autoimmune issue of mine, this sickness, and we thought we had it. Thought we had it licked here with the specialist. She gave me a shot. And it worked great for the first week. I was a brand new man, but then the symptoms are starting to come back, and that's not a good sign that they're not on exactly the right track. So, you know, I've been dealing with a lot of that. So I was hoping something would come up for August 29th because I noticed that Germany is planning a massive protest on the 29th, and then the UK organizers got on board, and they're going to run it the same day. And I thought, wow, that would be a great time for us to do another thing. And just so happened, after the big rally a couple of weeks ago in Quebec, one of the guys out of Quebec gave me a call or contacted me and said, we're going on the 29th. That's the next big one. I said, perfect. That's in line with Germany and the UK. That's a perfect day. I'm 100% on board. I'll promote it as best as I can. Shortly after that contact, I was contacted by the folks at the line. And they said the same thing, August 29th, they were at the Quebec rally, and of course, they're on board, and I said, yeah, I'm already on board, I'll promote the hell out of it, and, you know, hopefully we can make this a massive, massive protest on the 29th in Ottawa. Now, of course, Canada is obviously different than places like Germany and the UK and other European countries where it's, you know, a pretty small area, and a lot of people can find it quite easy to rally at a rally point. In Canada, it's so much harder for us. Especially out west to go to Ottawa, myself included. It's not an easy thing. And so, you know, I'm hoping that as many, I mean, let's face it, there's millions upon millions of people in Quebec and Ontario that could easily make it to Ottawa, and I'm hoping that's the case, and it looks like it is. But then I'm hoping, you know, other communities, other cities, especially in the west, you know, organize something in their local community in conjunction with what's happening in Ottawa. I mean, it, you know, obviously most people don't have the funds or don't have the time to make the trek to Ottawa for this. So hopefully, you know, other folks locally do something and organize something, put something together in conjunction with it. But so that's, you know, that's sort of our focus now until the 29th. After that, you know, the Forum for Canadian Sovereignty is still moving forward. We're waiting for our bank account to be set up so we can start doing some fundraising. And obviously we're going to continue to be as active as we can. Our original plan and mission was sort of snafu'd with this whole COVID thing because we wanted to host, you know, town halls and public speaking engagements and those types of things. And of course, you know, that's quite difficult to do. So, you know, those plans were sort of put on hold, but we're hoping that, you know, we can at least get some online town halls and some different engagements that way. But we'll see. So that's, you know, sort of, you know, what I'm involved with at this point. But it's, you know, from a political standpoint as well, there's the PPC, which, you know, of course I'm still a member and I'm still a supporter of. Once this election, this leadership election tonight is over at the Conservatives, it'll be made very apparent that, you know, it was just another
community
theater. And it'll either be McKay or O'Toole, and I still think it's McKay. I think he's had the nod and given the nod, and the elite and the Conservatives, the red Conservatives, the red Tories, will make sure he gets in. I could be very surprised, but I highly doubt it. You know, so there'll be a lot of people in that party, even, I think, asking questions and wondering, you know, what their next step will be. And of course the PPC will be here. And then there's, you know, there's some other things happening. There'll be a couple of by-elections in the fairly near future in Toronto. And, I think you'll see Maxime Bernier consider running in one of those. So, you know, things are very interesting in the next little while, at least politically, and also, you know, within activism. So, busy times, you know, lots of consequences, lots of things that are coming up that we're going to have to be very active on. So, my plate will be pretty full as long as I can get, this health issue dealt with.
Well, you know, the way I see it, Mark, right now in Canada, what choice do we have right now? We, you know, there's constitutional conventions going on, these groups that are trying to break up the country, and yeah. form their own governments. And I see that going on, and I understand where they're coming from. I've heard their arguments. I've looked into the situations and understand that Canada is not set up to serve the people under the current situation we're in right now, any shape or form. That being said, what we have in Ottawa right now, we have the NDPs, Conservatives, the Liberals, and the Greens, and they're all 100% globalists. So what choice do we have in Canada right now outside of supporting somebody like Maxime Bernier, who's come out very, very strongly against all United Nations involvement in Canada? If we could hold this man to his words, it would be a no-brainer as to who we want to be in running our country right now, because the people that are running it, folks, there is no difference. The NDPs are supporting the Liberals. There's backdoor deals being made that we don't know about. It's just a travesty, and we will never correct the situation under the current situation we're in. We have to have radical change in society. Radical times require radical changes, folks, period. Go ahead, Mark. Look what's going on in New Zealand. Look what's all going on down there with that party that's rising like crazy right now. Vinny Weiswell on next. Go ahead.
I spoke with Salim last night, and I've been speaking with some other folks. And an interesting discussion was had in a video that I watched. There was a couple of guys talking about Australia. And so yeah. Australia is sort of, you know, its own island, its own entity, and they don't have very many close friends in the neighborhood. And then of course China's just up the waterway there a little ways, and they have enormous influence in Australia, and so there's a plan to break up Australia into seven cantons, they called it, so essentially seven sovereign states in Australia that the Chinese will then come in and control, and so. You know, when I look at that scenario, I found it interesting because it sort of runs in line with what these constitutional convention folks are pushing. And, you know, I don't denounce these folks, and even Wexit comes into this argument as well. I don't denounce what they're doing because I think they're part of the process. I think they're playing a role in educating people as far as, you know, the desperation that we're in Canada. But it plays their plan, whether it's Wexit or constitutional conventions or whatever, to break up the country. That plays right into the globalist playbook. That's exactly what globalists do. I mean, Soros runs around, breaking up countries and having governments fall in countries and creating civil unrest. And that's a dream for the globalists to come in and take advantage of the vulnerable that's created out of that. The only way I see it, and, you know, it's my opinion, and I come to it with a lot of research and study to arrive at that opinion, is we have to be united. We have to be strong as a nation of patriots, as a nation. You know, our nation doesn't exist because of government. Our nation exists because of the people. The people ultimately have the power, and we have to unite. And again, back to, you know, common values across the country. There is a set of common values. There is a set of core values that we all cherish. And that's what we have to rally around to do the work of the globalists by splitting us up and fracturing us and dividing us into, you know, separate entities. Each entity in its own then becoming very vulnerable. I mean, I had a debate with the Wexit, the previous Wexit leader, what's his name?
I know his name. I can't remember. I can't remember either.
I supposed to know that. But anyways, I had him on my channel there, and we had a little debate. And I said, okay, so let's say you're able to attract the masses, enough of the masses to actually force, to be successful in a referendum to separate and you separate. Let's say, what happens the next day? when you still can't get pipelines to Tidewater because BC stands in your way, or Manitoba stands in your way, or, you know, whatever the case may be, what do you do? And his answer was, well, we go to the UN and the international law that the UN helps these landlocked countries get resources to Tidewater. And I had to laugh because, first of all, you're conceding and submitting then to a foreign entity for your security. And the second point to that, of course, is that law only applies to countries like Afghanistan, third world countries that, you know, depend on their survival depends on, you know, getting access to Tidewater. So it wouldn't even be applicable in that sense. So this is the thing, is these folks, I get it. I understand it. And listen, I've lived in Saskatchewan all my life. I understand how we've been screwed for, you know, 50 years. And I'm frustrated, and I get it. So, yes, at first blush, separation sounds like a great idea. But you're playing into the globalist handbook. You're playing into their agenda. It's exactly what they want, to make all of these little entities, little and small entities, very vulnerable entities, you know, easy for them to come in and make them then dependent on the UN. And so I think all of that is, you know, the end game to those things is not the right answer. I think it works, you know, exact opposite. And so that's why I've never been a proponent of any of these ideas. I've never been able to get on board with it. Although, again, I don't denounce it because I understand their frustration, and I think they're helping and educate, you know, the masses and fire them up. But ultimately, I think, you know, a united nation of Canada is the only way we defeat globalism. And we can't, even in that sense, Barry, we would have to be in a position where we're developing allies of countries that want to protect their nation status, their culture, their way of life. And those are the countries that need to align themselves with each other to defend against this globalist agenda. So, of course, you know, Trump and the United States would be a huge ally in that. But there's other countries now that are going populist. There's Poland, there's Austria, there's Hungary. Italy's moving in that direction. The UK with Brexit, they understand that the globalist agenda doesn't work. So these are the countries, Australia, New Zealand, that we have to align with to defend our values and Western civilization. And if we can do that, then we can defeat globalism. But even Canada on its own, as a nationalist country standing up for our values, it would be a pretty tough battle to do it alone. So, you know, you'd want to align with other countries that share the same values of a nation state and sovereign state. And, you know, I mean, so I don't see us being able to defeat globalism by dividing and fracturing our country and making all those particular entities vulnerable to this agenda. I don't see it. I don't agree with it, and I'll never be on board with it. So,
well, you know, Mark, I'm going to have to agree with you on that because, you know, I know where these people are coming from, and, you know, their hearts are in the right place. They all see what's going on in our country, and they're all trying to come up with solutions. But I have to agree with you that a divided country is a very easy country to defeat. A divided society is a very easy society to divide or defeat. And what do we see going on in our world right now? We see divided society and dividing countries. Like you said, this is playing right into the United Nations playbook. And, you know, no matter what our differences are in the country, this country was formed under real strong Judeo-Christian values. We had a very strong foundation, a good moral foundation in our country. And now we see it completely turned upside down, and we see all these divisions that are allowed to come into our society. People have to understand that what we have right now is admired by the rest of the world. We have one of the greatest countries in the world, bar none. Even though our political system isn't set up to serve the people under the current situation we're in, I absolutely agree with that. There is no arguing that. This is sworn to the crown. We understand that, but we still have a great country, and it's worth fighting for, yep. Mark.
Absolutely it is. And we have to, and it is our duty, and I take it on as a duty. And that's what makes us patriots, Barry. I mean, we're patriots to our country. Does that mean I'm a patriot to the system? Absolutely not. Does that mean I'm beholden to the system? Absolutely not. means that I'm fighting to keep this country together. My country, Canada, is the people. It's not the government. It's not the politicians. They're actually there to represent our values and to protect our freedoms, and they're doing the exact opposite. So I get it. I understand it. The system is flawed. The system is broken. I agree 100%. But we have to come together and fix it from within. Now, when you boil that all down, right, when you understand all of these and you agree, and so what then becomes the option? Well, the option then becomes the only party that is willing to defend those values and create and protect the nation state and promote the idea of a nation state and our culture and our freedoms and all our values. There's only one party that does that. There's only one party outside the establishment, and that's BPC on a federal level. That's it. And you know, I've said it for a long time, Barry. My whole objective isn't to become a politician for me. I don't want to be a politician. I mean, on Parliament Hill on Canada Day in my speech, I said, look at me. I'm not a politician. I should be in a canoe somewhere up north enjoying nature. But it's my duty now. I have to do this. And it's not because I want to be a politician. It's because I see that as the only way to fix our problems. And the reality is most Canadians are still in the system. They still believe in the system. They're still entrenched and entranced by the system. That's the vast majority. That's the reality. So if you're denouncing anybody who still believes in the political system, then you're basically alienated yourself from the majority of Canadians. And so how are you going to be successful in rallying and uniting those people when they still believe in the system? So, you know, for me to have the most impact, for me to be able to reach as many people as possible, I have to do it from within the system. The system that I don't like, the system that isn't working for us, and that needs to be changed. But you're only going to reach the masses to affect the change if you do it from within. There's no other way. Unless I'm wrong and there's going to be some sort of rebellion that I'm not aware of that I can't see happening, you know, that's what it's going to take. Because whether these people believe it or not, creating their own do you think the government's just going to say, oh, yeah, sorry, you know what, you're right, here, go ahead. Break up the country and develop your own constitution, your own country of Saskatchewan. Go ahead. They're just going to do that? They're just going to let that happen? Of course not. Of course they're not. And you don't have the masses behind you to fulfill those goals. And that's what you need. The power is with the people. You're not going to inspire a nation by dividing it into all of these little entities. So, you know, as much as I respect the people that are doing it, I respect and I get it. I understand why you're at where you're at. For me, when I look at it and I bust it all down and boil it all down, to me, it's not the answer, at least not at this point.
Yeah, I kind of came to the same conclusion myself, Mark, because, you know, you're not going to get the country of Canada to embrace constitutional reform. And the only way that could possibly happen in this country right now is if it was embraced by the masses in voice and the government would have to listen to what we're saying. Yep. That's not going to happen because society is so conditioned into the mainstream that you're not going to wake up enough people in a short period of time to make this feasible. Nope. So I respect what they're doing and I applaud, you know, anybody that's standing against the government, any way, any shape, any form right now, I applaud. But I think they're going about this the wrong way, myself.
Well, politics is downstream from culture. And until you are able to change the culture, you're not going to be able to change the system.
Exactly.
And how do you change the culture? You got to go through the system because that's what the majority of Canadians still believe in. And if you can do that, if you can get in through the system and be able to reach the masses and say, listen, our system is broken. We need to open the Constitution. We need to, you know, there's a lot of things we need to do to fix this. We need to do it, you know, from within. You're not going to do it from outside. It's just, it's not going to happen. There's just not enough people that are awake to how bad it is. So, you know, again, you know, I know these people's hearts are in the right place. I know that they want change and they want it now, and they're working their tail off to try to make it happen. And I applaud that. I don't denounce them. In fact, you know, go ahead, do what you got to do, whatever you believe in, because it helps. it helps get the word out. It helps educate. It helps inform people. Exactly. And maybe it wakes them up, to what's really happening. So, carry on. I don't denounce them. You do what you do. But let me do what I do, because I'm part of the process. And the PPC is part of the process. And that's, I think really, again, with stating all of those facts, that's really the only chance we have, the way I see it.
Yeah, we are definitely in a situation right now where the country is torn, Mark, and I don't know what the solution is outside of fixing the problem from within. And I have to agree with you. We're not going to fix it from without. We have to get inside and expose it to the public, and maybe we can make the changes.
Well, and just a message to all those folks that, imagine that going through the system, being able to reach the masses and educate and inform them and actually change the culture, which I don't think is as hard as people make it out to be, because, again, we have this granite foundation based on natural law and morals and these values of freedom, liberty, and justice. We have that foundation that we can build and unify a movement and unify and get to the point where, yes, just imagine, let's do a thought experiment. Let's just say that we managed to do that and the PPC gets elected in a majority situation. Imagine what, with that power of the people behind that movement, behind that party, the changes that we could actually make and actually throw out the globalists from Parliament. Throw out, redo the Senate, make it a triple E Senate so there's equal representation from one province to the other.
Exactly. Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Like shut down the immigration, the mass immigration, the migration. Shut down, open up our resources. Let us get into the market. We would prosper like we've never prospered before if we allowed that to happen. All of these things that we could do and make and have the power and the support of the people to actually make the changes to the Constitution that needs to be create an actual Constitution instead of a constitutional act that's been thrown down our face. Actually,
can I get
down
ahead?
And create a Constitution, right? With provincial autonomy and fundamental rights being at the bedrock of our Constitution, free speech, freedom to bear arms, all of these things mirror the American Constitution. Actually, we have the ability to do that. Imagine what we could do. To me, it's just, it's extremely exciting because, wow, we could actually have the power of the people behind us to rid and fix the system and rid ourselves of the globalist agenda.
Well, we don't have a choice, Mark. We really don't have a choice right now at all.
No.
We have to stop this. I got a question for you, though, something I got to ask you. It came forward this week about what Maxime Bernier is getting from the party. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. What were the numbers that you saw? Because I hear a lot of backlash against that right now. I wanted to ask you about that.
104,000 is Maxime's wage, apparently, 104,000 per year.
And who's paying for that?
Well, the party, of course.
Okay. Okay, I wanted to clarify that.
And,
hear a lot of backlash against it, that's all.
There's some misconception that he's also drawing pension. He's not yet. He's not old enough. So he's not drawing that gold-plated pension, and we all know that he has that coming. We all know that he's, did his time in Parliament, and that is the structure that's set up. So, it is what it is. And, when you're paying a party leader, whatever, 104,000 a year, I don't have a problem with it. I really don't. And, I've even taken heat because I'm associated with Max and he's drawing a wage. He's the party leader of a federal party. He gets paid what he gets paid. If the party thinks that he's getting paid too much, then I guess we'll have a meeting and say, no, that's too much. I don't know.
I did actually have one conversation with Maxime about 2 years ago. I had about a half hour conversation with him. And one of the questions I put forward to him is ever elected, would he consider recall legislation that came at him from all avenues of the party? And he said to me that if that was something that everybody in the party was pushing for. He put it up for vote in the party. Now, if Mark, if a politician came forward right now and said that we are going to include recall legislation as part of our mandate, where the public can actually kick you out of there if you're not doing that job that you told us you were going to do, that would go a long way with what I see him being honest to the Canadian people about giving the power back to the people, because that's what we hear a lot.
I agree. I agree.
So for me, that would go miles. And I think that's something that the party should really discuss. If we go into an election, if that was put forward, Mark, I'm telling you, that would ripple through society. Would ripple through society, buddy. So would I. I mean, we've never had that in Canada. Well, you know, Trudeau got in there, and this guy is just destroying our country, folks. What he has done to Canada, I don't have the words to describe my hate for that man. And I'm not supposed to hate people, Mark. I'm not. But I cannot describe an emotion for this guy other than hate, because I see what he's doing to absolutely destroy this country. And people are still crickets, Mark. And I'm telling you, if they don't get off their butts, we're going to lose. But I think we're going to win, buddy. I do. I got to be positive. Well, got to keep up to the floor.
Absolutely. No, I agree 100%, my friend.
Oh, we lost you.
Hello? I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah. You got me? Yeah.
No, yeah, we got you.
And I agree 100%, my friend. Yep.
Okay, Mark, we're down to the last about 3 minutes here. I'm going to have to let you go in a couple minutes. Why don't you share with people where they can find you? Mark does shows all the time, guys, so tune in. He's called the Grizzly Patriot, and I'll let you tell him the rest, Mark.
Yeah, so, you know, I got my YouTube channel, the Grizzly Patriot, or Mark Friesen. You can find it either way. And, of course, I'm on Facebook under my regular profile, and then of course I have a group, Forum for Canadian Sovereignty. I have a page, Forum for Canadian Sovereignty, and then I have my PPC page, Mark Friesen PPC, and then of course I'm on Twitter, and when I do my live streams, I simulcast it through all of those platforms when I go live through StreamYard. So that's where you can find me. We also have the website ffcs.info. By all means, sign up to email notifications. We don't flood people with spam. We send out important, while lately it's been regarding protests and that sort of thing. So if you want to be part of that, just sign up your email and you'll be in regular contact with us, because who knows how long we're going to last on social media, all of us.
Yeah, they're coming down hard on us, Mike. They're marking this this opportunity to talk like this might be taken away in the near future. So I got to say, it's been a pleasure, Mark, talking with you. I know we share so many common thoughts and concerns for the country. I look forward to talking to you again in the near future, and thanks for joining me today.
You bet, Barry. Anytime. I always love coming on your show and having a good chat. So anytime, okay, brother. I appreciate it.
Okay, brother. Well, we'll let you go, and I'm going to be taking a 3-minute nature break, guys, and I'll be back with Brad Salzberger from Canadian Cultural Party. Oh, excuse me. Culture Action Party of Canada. Excuse me. Back in 3 minutes. Okay, welcome back, folks. Second hour, and thanks again to Mark for the conversation. The first hour, and always enjoy talking with that man. Second hour here, I'm joined by Brad Salzberg. Brad is the founder of the Cultural Action Party in British Columbia, and I believe nationwide. Welcome to the show, Brad. We haven't talked in a while, and looking forward to this chat about something that I see as a major threat in Canada. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Barry.
Yeah, before we went on to air there, Brad, I know that one of your major concerns is the Islamization of our government and the forefronts of Sharia law being set down in our country. It's something that disturbs me greatly, and I know that disturbs you greatly. It's something I kind of like to talk about today, and maybe we could talk about that for a bit.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, what we're seeing in Canada is not unique to Canada, of course. This is a pattern that repeats in not every Western nation, but certainly many Western democracies and Western European nations, United States and down under, New Zealand, Australia, etc. It is the way of the religion. It's the way of how politics and religion and power are consolidated and integrated in a manner that can lead eventually to power, control, and domination, which has happened historically where nations have actually been transformed from non-theocracies to theocratic Islamic governments and nations. To me, it's the nature of it. It's and it's very much tied in with what you mentioned, Sharia law and halal. These things are positioned as core elements of a religion, but they are seriously impactful in terms of how societies, Western societies or Christian dominated societies, over time can be eroded by this kind of religious slash political force. And I believe that's happening in Canada. It doesn't mean our country is finished, but I will say that I do believe that of any Canadian politician, any public figure in history, Justin Trudeau is unique in that he's actually he's intentionally integrated the Nation of Islam into Canadian society. Now, this is done in a purely non-democratic capacity, and not to veer off too much here, but there's a distinct parallel between what Pierre Trudeau did with multiculturalism in the early 1970s and how he entrenched that in a non-democratic manner, as in without the public's buy-in or without even really consulting the public on it. And all of a sudden, our previous bicultural British and French Canadian identity, which was valid and was strong and meaningful, at least when I lived in Halifax, Nova Scotia, growing up as a boy and going into high school, it had meaning. Pierre Trudeau single-handedly canceled this, replaced it with what I personally consider to be anti-Anglophone social policy called multiculturalism. And then Justin Trudeau comes along some 30 to 40 years later and pulls the same business with the Nation of Islam and CBC and Globe and Mail. And not one Canadian media outlet has the guts to even allude to any of this.
Yeah, complete silence by the media. And, you know, when we talk about this subject, it's a dicey subject. We know that today. That, you know, people are going to say, well, you're racist, you're Islamic phobe, you're a bigot, you're everything in the book.
Of course.
But what you're saying, Brad, is true. Now, I am not against immigration myself, as long as it's done properly and it's done fair. I don't believe that immigration should be focused on one area of the planet and bring in hundreds of thousands of people from one society into our society that will never assimilate to our society, ever. And what are we doing to a society when we do that? That's called cultural suicide. And that's not being racist. That's calling it like it is. My parents came here as immigrants, Brad, but they came. There wasn't a golden spoon sitting for them here in Canada when they arrived. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, the way, you know, the way that I look at it, or I guess Cultural Action Party's view on this, is there is a difference between Muslim Canadians and the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam is an ideology. It's a political, so-called religious ideology. Now, saying that I don't like it in Canada, or I personally disagree with it, is different than saying that, all, you know, for example, all XYZ immigrants from XYZ nation are bad and evil. They're not the same thing. But what the media does, and what Trudeau does, and MP Ahmad Hassan, of course, and these people do, is they play the race card. And the race card in 2020 Canada functions as pretty much like a hammer. It's a hammer blow to the head. And, you know, and this is what they've done for the past 5 years since Justin became prime minister. So everything, every form of pushback, racist, not racist, insinuated, blatant, it's all racism. And that racism label, here's how I look at that. If Anglophone Canada were cattle, we would all be corralled into the thing, the corral, and slam the doors shut. And you see, this is the prison. This is our prison. Because consider this, okay? Consider this pretty simple idea. Any time a non-white Canadian screams racism, you know, that's racism. Yet if there's an anti-Christian or anti-Anglophone incident, you know, that's not racism. When CBC says, which is true, we have a policy of putting non-whites before whites in terms of hiring now, employment, which is absolutely true, they call that multiculturalism. CAP calls that racism, because all they're really doing is saying, okay, you're Anglophone, you're white, you're a Canadian-born, regular Canadian, and we won't hire you because of that. Now, that is racism, but you see, society, CBC, that's multiculturalism. So this hypocritical double standard has got Anglophone Canada in this cattle corral thing, and they slam the door, you know, and now we're stuck, you see. And if you think about it, I mean, is it not true that white Canadians are the singular identifiable community in Canada whereby it is perfectly fine and legitimate to rip them to shreds, call us racist, bigots, xenophobes, as far as genocidal, and to call it systemic racist, and to claim that, as it happened in 1867 at the founding of our nation, it's the same in 2020. You know, this is just anti-white propaganda.
Yeah, we interesting situation we find ourselves in, Brad. You know, political correctness has really had an impact on our society. You know, if you talk about persecution of Christians as an imam in a mosque in Canada, that's accepted now. That's not classified as hate speech. Yet we have some of the highest ranking imams in Canada in the mosque being recorded, telling that, you know, us Christians, we have to have our heads chopped off. The government gives them a buy on that. Why is that going on? That's a really big question.
You know the answer. You may well know it. I tell you my opinion. On October 19th, 2015, the day that Justin Trudeau became prime minister, Canada transitioned to an anti-Christian, pro-Islamic country. And that's what we are now. in terms of institutions, academic institutions, universities, media, of course, government, of course, Trudeau, MP Ahmad Hassan, who's one of the most powerful politicians in Canada, who's a half-Somalian citizen. He's been in Canada for over 30 years. He still has a Somalian citizenship. He won't give it up. And this guy, Rose, this is a very good example. You know, he came to Canada as a refugee some 30 years ago from Somalia, you know, a backwash dump of a nation. And he comes to Canada. He goes from refugee status all the way to the cabinet, to the very pinnacle of government in Canada, after which, as one example, when a woman asked Trudeau, how are you paying for all these illegal immigrants, you know, crossing the border, running into Canada, Trudeau said, well, you're a racist. And then the next day, Ahmad Hassan said, yeah, well, that's racism. Well, yeah, all she did was ask a question about the costs. She didn't say, F this, and you people are F and that. She just asked, so you see what happens, right? So this guy, like I say, reaches the pinnacle of the Canadian government, comes from nothing, backwash Somalia, and then he turns around and brands the country systemically racist. Well, listen, Mr. Hassan, how did you get in the cabinet if Canada is systemically racist? But there's no answer from him, CBC, media, or anyone else.
That's a pretty heavy double standard, isn't it? To say the least.
Well, I mean, Canada has a government of absolute hypocrisy. I mean, I could go on about this all, you know, forever, but I mean, I'll try to keep it brief here. Look at the difference between the Trudeau government's treatment of persecuted Christians in the Middle East versus Muslims in the Middle East. It's an absolute farce. I mean, Justin Trudeau has never mentioned one word about what has been labeled genocide by no less than Barack Obama's American government. When he was president, they labeled the Iraq genocide. Okay, that's Barack Obama. Justin Trudeau, not a chance. He's never mentioned the topic. Mr. Human Rights has never mentioned the genocide or mass murder of Christians in Nigeria, which is the number four immigration source in Canada right now. So he just turns a blind eye to the murder and outrageous human rights abuses against Christians in the Middle East while saving 50,000 Syrian refugees within 24 hours of him becoming prime minister in 2015. So, I mean, there are endless examples. But the problem is, just to finish this off, the problem for our people, Anglophone Canadians, Christian Canadians, Francophone, it is that the media has hidden all this from society's knowledge. And when media and government are united in this manner, it is an emulation of communism. And who's the Trudeau's family favorite nation? Alexandra, brother Trudeau, Justin, and Pierre before them. Their favorite nation is China. Well, they're morphing Canada into a miniature version of China, and the media go along with it.
Yeah, the media is the biggest onion of its people in this country, bar none, Brad. And one day, I believe they're going to be held accountable. I honestly believe that.
Because they should all
be taken out right now and hung for treason. They are not exposing anything to the Canadian public that the public needs to know, period. And we could talk about multiple situations. When you control the media, you control the media, you control the people. And this government completely...
That is correct. What Canadians don't realize is that our media, Globe and Mail, National, this is a fishbowl. It's a fishbowl. What's going on in Europe now in terms of populist and nationalism over there is actually booming, but they never say a word, not a word, right? Because they're locked in, all right? Now, you know, this is a manifestation of Trudeau and going back to Pierre Trudeau and communism in China. Pierre Trudeau is the first Western leader to embrace China. And the Trudeau family has been, you know, frankly, kissing their butt ever since.
Yep. I agree. He has sold us out, buddy. Totally. Completely. And it's only getting worse.
I agree. And the thing is, as Canadians are waking up slowly to the reality of this situation, the powers that be are speeding up the process. So now, I'll give you another example, and this fellow is really trouble, nothing but trouble. MP Ahmad Hassan. He was immigration minister for about a three-year period from around 2016 to 2019. He flew back and forth to Africa 24 times, setting up bilateral diplomatic agreements and economic agreements, you know, between Ethiopia and Canada. Like, you know, where is our benefit in that? But anyway, and also, of course, immigration ties. He set up this entire program for mass immigration from Africa, which is what is happening right now. He virtually, you know, because he goes over there, he's Somalian. He's like, look how successful a Somalian refugee can be in Canada. You can do it too. Of course, Justin picked him as immigration minister. He's the best salesman you could get to sell Canada to Africa. And you see, and this is the pattern. Pierre Trudeau sold, you know, using this general term, Pierre Trudeau sold Canada to China. Jean Chrétien sold it to, you know, the Liberals sold it to Sikhs or whomever. And then Justin Trudeau sold it to Islam. And then he hired MP Ahmad Hassan to sell it to Africa, you know. Like, this is what goes on, you know. So this guy, Ahmad Hassan, who calls white Canada racist, forgets all about the persecution of Christians in Nigeria, okay? And we're talking like, you know, these vigilante gangs that go up and, you know, blow up a church and kill everyone inside. Nothing happens. Nothing happens. They get away with it. And Hassan goes and makes them number four on the charts of intake to Canada. Now, this is one thing, but degree of media focus or, you know, attention or criticism or any focus whatsoever, zero, not one thing. The whole program was done away from the eyes of the Canadians. It was Trudeau assigning a Somalian refugee to the arguably the most powerful social position, society-oriented position in all of Canada. The guy sets up a, you know, they're going to bring 1 million or 2 million Africans to Canada now. And how much focus did CBC have on that? Try 0%. Nothing.
Crickets. Well, you know what? We got to call a spade, okay? And I'm not, you know, Brad, I honestly love all people. I believe everybody deserves a good chance in life. But the fact is that anywhere that Somalian refugees seem to go in our world right now, and I could lay down multiple examples, there seems to be a lot of trouble following them. What in Red Deer, Alberta, we just had a doctor killed by a hammer by a Somalian refugee. He's been in the country for, 18 months, I believe, Brad? And he killed one of the a doctor that was just loved in the community. Killed him.
It's
going all over the country now. You know, we could talk about the dance force, we could talk about all these incidences. And yet Trudeau came out when he announced his program, said, I'll be responsible for any death of any Canadian due to my immigration programs.
It's a lie. It's a complete...
I know it's a lie.
Barry, how much responsibility did Justin Trudeau show for the Syrian refugee who murdered 13-year-old schoolgirl Marissa Shen? None. Okay, how much empathy and sympathy did Justin Trudeau or Ahmad Hassan, the guy responsible for the immigration program at the time these refugees came in, what did they have to say about the Danforth killer who killed a 10-year-old girl and an 18-year-old girl? And what did they have to say of criticism of the Syrian refugee who we know factually did that? Nothing. He's a liar.
They don't talk about the 42 pounds of fentanyl that was found in the basement of the house that the Danforth shooter was staying in, do they? That's one of the biggest stories right. that should have been exposed, and it was brushed under the rug. There was enough carfentanil.
Absolutely.
Fentanyl is the derivative of it. It's 1,000 times stronger than fentanyl. There was enough there to kill every Canadian 8 times over, Brad. And it was brushed under the rug immediately. What? Why would somebody have carfentanil in their basement? That's like a lot
of... He's a dope dealer, and he was a terrorist influenced or connected dope dealer.
Yeah, of course he was. Of course he was. But that story got...
But I mean... You know, gonna say on this point, and I don't think there's, I certainly think this is a very recent case in Red Deer, Alberta, where a white doctor was murdered, by a Sudanese refugee mental midget. The guy is really just, you know, what's the point of this guy even being in Canada? The only thing he brought, allegedly, is murder. And the Red Deer City Council and Mayor Tara Veer, they wouldn't make a single comment on it. Not a word. Not anything. And the family never said a word. Now, this guy's a South African doctor. I have to assume his family's not completely stupid, right? Now, they didn't say one freaking word either. The whole thing is buried, and it ties into Marissa Shannon. It ties into the Danforth case, right? Now, why does media and why do city... councils and municipal governments refuse to recognize any of this. Why do they remain silent? Because they have to. And the reason they have to is because they, as I understand this, okay, don't quote me on this because it I'm not 100%, but you know, the mystery of why they're entirely silent, you know, about a refugee murdering a doctor with a machete, you know, in Red Deer, is because they have to sign, I think, or adhere to a refugee policy set by the United Nations. So here you have this most insane situation where the United Nations is obviously a global institution, uber powerful institution, and this is the government in Red Deer or in Prince George, and they have to adhere to their standards, you see? That's why Canada is just, it's a dead democracy. It's just, and Trudeau sold it. He sold us out.
Yeah, he has, and a lot of people are still going along with this, but I do see people waking up, Brad, and I said that in the first hour. I'm seeing people wake up now almost in droves. So at this point, we really got to get this information out.
If the thing is, and it's just, it's sad. It's a sad story because if the media did not cooperate in obscuring and covering, spinning and morphing everything into this, that, and the other, you know, a good 80% of Canadians could understand that Canada's on the verge of being, its democracy being destroyed, which I believe will happen over the next decade or so, maybe 20 years, maybe less. And as far as I'm concerned, what has arrived, and you know, like not 100%, but looks pretty strong, okay, is a socialist dictatorship. And it will have a designated oppressed community, and that will be you, Barry, and that will be Christian Canada, and that will be the new Second Nations community. And that's what people like Ahmad Hassan want, you know. And this is how precarious the whole situation is, right? Like, in my opinion, and now I've been at this for 40 years, okay, you know, and I've written and followed this, particularly since Justin became prime minister, I would say every day for the entire time, 5 years straight. So, and I just, from what I see, we're a dying democracy. If there's an election in 2023, it's just going through the motions. Maybe I'm wrong. I can't read the future, but I think it's game over for democracy. And I think the new Canada will be anti-Anglophone and anti-Christian in repayment for what they say was our treatment of First Nations. We become Second Nations. That's Cultural Action Party theory right there.
Well, I'm going to do everything I can to stop that, Brett, and I'm sure you are too, because I know
you do. Exactly. I mean,
I was just going to add a thought.
I'm sorry.
A couple minutes ago, that you said, you know, we've got maybe 10 years, maybe 20 years. I don't think we have that much time, my friend. And I say that because I look at what's going on in the rest of the world. What's going on in Canada right now is going on around this planet, and we see it ramping up. I think that we're in a time right now that, honestly, that if we don't really put the brakes on this in the next couple of years, we're going to lose it. And I say that for multiple reasons. You know that Trudeau is invading. There's so many people coming into this country that the public aren't aware of, Brad, through the worker programs, through the student programs, the illegals that are coming into our country.
That's
then
right.
The migration. Right now, Brad, we're at like close to 1 million people a year coming into Canada. Well, how many years of 1 million people a year do you have to have before you've got yourself a voter base? And that's exactly what this government is doing, Brad. You know that, and I know that. I don't think we've got 10 years to fix this.
I agree.
Okay?
But yes, I agree with you completely, and it is true. And now they're moving the immigration thing to the smaller towns to replicate the, you know, Brampton and Richmond, B.C., et cetera. Another thing that Hussein did and the media covered up is this rural immigration program. It's basically going to emulate what has gone on in urban Canada, where third world – this is a little bit more focused on the GTA Toronto area, but that area, and another thing media has buried, is it's completely dominated by Sikh Canadian and Muslim Canadian liberal MPs. It's a powerhouse and of third world power. And Justin built that with Gerald Butts and with his strategists and with the, you know, they built that. They built that empire, and now they're going to replicate it in those small towns. Vernon, apparently, is rumored that Vernon, B.C., is going to be completely overwhelmed with immigration. So they say. I can't verify, but I know it's one of the main targeted communities for a big immigration expansion. So here we see the methodology whereby Justin Trudeau and Gerald Butts behind the scenes and these characters are creating a situation where there will be no purpose for voting. There'll be no purpose because the Liberals will control 90% of the 338 ridings that there are now in Canada, and they'll expand it higher. And they'll control 90% of them. So tell me why Andrew Scheer or Peter McKay or Aaron O'Toole, that they're going to spend their time and enough fundraising to get $10 million to run an election. They have absolutely no chance of winning. You know, that's where Trudeau's taking us, and that's what I call a liberal dictatorship. They're going to destroy democracy, in my opinion, and they use third world immigration to do it. Doesn't mean every third world person is awful and evil. It means they're a tool. They're a puppet in this thing. They're used. And, of course, we are being used even more than them because we pay for it with our tax dollars. You know, it's an insane situation.
Brad, I phoned the Canadian government, and I told them I wanted to denounce my Canadian citizenship. And I'd like to come back into Canada as an illegal immigrant because then I'd get free dental. Free I said this right to the government. I want to renounce my Canadian citizenship. I'm now an illegal. I'm coming into Canada legally. I would like the same benefits that you're giving to the illegals that are coming into this country. That is such an injustice in our society. But, Brad, right now, I honestly believe that we're in a full-blown fascist dictatorship. People don't see it, but when you control the police force like the government is, when you control the media like the government is, we're in a fascist dictatorship. Yep. They completely control the media, the police forces, Brad, because if not, let me finish my thought. If not,
Sorry.
You'd be in jail right now. Go ahead. So why isn't he in jail?
It's an absolute crime. I couldn't disagree with what you're saying. What I was thinking, you know, when you're saying this, is that if you look at the area of communism and Marxism and Karl Marx and what his ideology, was about, you'll see that these terms, socialism and communism, you know, they, like, it's used in a sense that in a socialist society, the public do not recognize that they're communist. In a communist society such as China, everyone knows. You ask Joe Chan on the street is what kind of government you have. It's communist. Everyone knows that. But socialism's different. Socialism can be something like Canada is right now, where it looks like democracy, but it isn't. Or it's socialist, but the public doesn't know it. That's where we're at. So it's a progression, and Marxism talks about a progression from, capitalism to socialism to communism.
Exactly.
And, you know, so it's really basic Marxist theory, how this is all developing. We're in the stage where the media are covering up. Few people realize. There's all kinds of different terms we use, you know, totalitarian and dictatorship, fascist, a bit of them all apply in this case. I mean, if you read George Orwell's Animal Farm book, you are reading the story of the transition to communism of Canada. I mean, George Orwell wrote about this in, I think this would be the 1940s. And he's a bang on. I read that book. There's the story of Canada morphing away from a truly free and democratic society into a socialist dictatorship. And when this happens, Islam will be the belle of the ball and Christianity will be in the basement. It'll be down and out.
Absolutely. Two books that I've read, Brad, that I recommend everybody read. And I don't do a lot of reading, but I've read The Communist Manifesto. And I've also read a book called Rules for Radicals by Sal Zelinsky. And I'll tell you, folks, if you read that book, you will see exactly what is going on in our society today. Going back to what Brad said, the 40s, when things really started, they started implementing these programs.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's just as some of these visionary writers and George Orwell and others laid it out about, tell me if we're getting off topic, but one thing that I really know is something called word speak. Word speak is where the government, select words to use that are really just propaganda and that. So one quick one, and it's very current, is prorogate. So the media, CBC and Globe and Mail, they're, Trudeau has prorogated government. And I'm like, they have, huh? Well, I bet you, including myself, 95% of Canadians don't know what the heck prorogate means. What he really did is suspend democracy in Canada. That's what he did. See, he's already suspended democracy. It's already, in terms of moving towards socialism and communism, he's already suspended it. But the media say prorogate, and then they give an example of where Stephen Harper, I guess, did it at one point, and they're like, oh, well, it's been done before. Well, I'll tell you something. Justin Trudeau has not been done before. Justin Trudeau is unprecedented, and he's here to destroy. He's a destroyer, in my opinion. I said that from day one. Okay, behind this beard and smirk, whatever it is, this guy has a hardened heart, and he has a destructive nature, like some characters in the past history that we can think of also did. But again, the media propped him up.
Yeah,
Do tell, Barry, how would we go from sunny ways, to this, to COVID?
It's 1984 in our face. And, I'm not supposed to use the word hate, but how can you describe Justin Trudeau without adding the word hate? See what this guy has done to our country in 5 years, man. It's just, I'm sitting here blown away.
Incredible. I mean,
absolutely.
I don't think
this guy put $380 billion on our debt since March, Brad. $380 billion now.
Well,
you're going to spend another $50 billion on CERB. Well, what's CERB doing, Brad? It's conditioning society to a universal payroll.
That's right.
The government's
got
it.
That's exactly what it is.
I hear people in my community laughing. Oh, I don't have to go to work. Government's giving me $2,000 a month. I can just sit home, play games on my. Oh, for God's sake, folks, don't you see what's going on? what they're conditioning society to become.
They don't. They don't. I agree. It's conditioning.
Of course it is.
You know, along...
Go ahead.
I'll give you a very good example of this, okay? There's a senator named Yuen Tao Wu. He's a Chinese senator. Now, Trudeau appointed this guy as the... When Trudeau set up the independent division, whatever it's called, of the Senate, he placed this guy, Senator Yuen Tao Wu, in charge. Okay, now just 2 days ago, I read an article, an interview with him, and shock. His recommendation was that CERB be morphed into guaranteed basic income. Now, this guy is the single biggest China pusher in the history of our country.
Yes,
this guy is, he has pushed, this is true, okay? This guy once, as the CEO of Asia Pacific Foundation, gave a proposal to the Canadian, to school boards for every school in Canada from Newfoundland, St. John's, to Victoria, to teach Chinese. All of them. That's what he wanted. Every school in Canada, right? You see, and that's just one example, you know, of what this guy is like. And what did Trudeau do? Made him the head of the independent Senate. The guy's like, oh, I think it's a good idea if CERB morphs into guaranteed income. I said, of course you do. You're a friggin' communist from China. And Justin Trudeau empowered you, you see? And he empowers a Somalian refugee. Please do tell. How objective is a Somalian refugee going to be about immigration worldwide? He's going to bring in white people from South Africa? No, he shut the door on them. You know, and so obviously he's going to serve his own people. Why would Justin Trudeau appoint him?
Well, you know, if you look at the members of parliament in Canada right now, I think there's 7 on the list that have direct ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. And these guys are running our country. Folks, if you don't know what the Muslim Brotherhood's all about, you really need to do some research. And these guys are making our laws, Brad. How did that ever happen? How did that ever happen? How do we allow this to go on in our country? Where have we been for the last 80 years?
I can explain. I can tell you the detail on one of them. I'm not going to put out names here, but there's one MP, again from the GTA, Toronto, powerhouse, third world, liberal stronghold, okay, who set up a tour of mosques for Justin Trudeau in 2014. Nationwide, you know, you'd go from Victoria Mosque to Vancouver into Toronto and Calgary. He did this whole tour. Now, this guy set up the tour for him, after which Justin Trudeau rewarded him by making him Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs. This role means that person is in charge of every foreign embassy.
Oh, what happened? I'm not hearing. What's going on here? What happened?
Hello?
Oh, there. There you are.
Hello?
Hello?
No, I'm sorry. It cut out.
Yeah, you were gone for about 30 seconds, 40 seconds there. I couldn't hear anything for the last 30, 40 seconds, Brett.
Oh, darn. Okay,
you're
sorry.
Back now. All right, go ahead. Continue with you wherever you were about 30 seconds ago.
No, I mean...
Everybody's audio is fine.
You know, I think...
Barry?
We're very much on this... Barry?
Hold on. Yes, Steve.
The audio is fine.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Okay, go ahead, Brett.
You know, I mean, this what can one say about this? There's something in people may know in Chinese history with Mao Zedong called the Silent Revolution, the Quiet Revolution, and that's what this is. And it is quiet because Anglophone Canada and Canadians of European heritage are not comprehending what is being done. And what it is, it's a what I call it, social inversion. Those who were a priority or who had the power or who, white Canadians, they're being driven to the basement, and the third world is being elevated to the penthouse, if you want to put it that way. And that's what's going on. So, it would be one thing, okay, if Justin Trudeau and the Liberal government did all this and it did not contain a punitive element toward white Canada. But in my opinion, it does. It's destructive. It's harmful. It's a punishment doled out to one identifiable Canadian community, and that is Anglophone Canada, or Canadians of European origin, or Anglo-Christians. We know what we're talking about, the old stock peoples of Canada. That's what CAP cares about. That's what I care about, okay? Now, for this to be decimated as a community and also labeled as some kind of nemesis community because all we do is live and breathe racism 24 hours a day, is an absolute crime. And this is what Trudeau has done to us, especially by a series of apologies to every ethnic community he could find. And you know how he words these apologies? It's so pathetic. He's like, Canada failed you. Canada failed you. Komagata Maru, which is a 100-person ship from India that came to Canada in 1905, okay? And the government rejected them because, in fact, the crew were terrorists. Well, not terrorists, but, they were political troublemakers. They weren't here to be Canadian. They were here to cause trouble back in India. So the government said, no, turn around. You can't come in, okay? 120 years later, they're still harping on it. And the systemic racism again. This is 1905. Hey, folks, guess what? United Nations didn't even exist then. There was no such thing as human rights. Every nation was racist on Earth. I mean, what are you giving us this story about a boatload of Sikhs? And to put it in that way, to say Canada failed you, which Canada, Justin? Canada of 2020? Canada of 1905, all Canadians who ever lived, Canada didn't fail nothing. They rejected a boatload of Sikhs in 1905. You can't come in. They didn't kill them. They didn't even harm them. And this is, so there's an example of Trudeau idiocy and globalist multicultural deception and propaganda.
Well, diversity is not our strength, Brad, and that's all you hear from this
absolutely
government.
Absolutely not. Diversity is trouble for Anglophones. It's trouble. If Trudeau succeeds, I know I said this already, but there's a First Nations Canadian community, and there may well be a Second Nations Canadian community, and that will be poor white people. And people like Ahmad Hassan and these, these sketchy half-citizen, half-Pakistani citizens, they'll be in control if Trudeau gets his way, in my opinion.
Well, we don't have immigration going on in this country, Brad. We have an invasion going on. And like I said at the beginning of the show, our country was found on strong immigration policies where people came to this country. They knew they were going to have to assimilate to our culture. They were going to have to get a job because there wasn't a welfare check waiting for them when they got off the boat. We have turned it upside down. And, of course, these people over in Africa, they see what's going on in country. Well, in Canada, wouldn't you kill to get here, Brad? It's the land of milk and honey. Yeah. As soon as you land in Canada, the government gives you money. They give you houses. They give you clothes. They give you cell phones. They give you free medical and dental.
Yep.
this is upside down, Brad. You know, why?
It's exactly what it is.
Matter? Well, why? The questions that you have to ask, without sounding racist, just a practical question, is why these people that are coming into Canada illegally, just walking across the border, claiming asylum, are treated like gold, well above what a normal, hardworking Canadian who's contributed to the system all of his life is getting treated.
Okay.
What kind of vision is that? Brad, go ahead.
Doesn't that tell us that it is the United Nations controlling our country rather than the domestic government, if you want to put it that way? I mean, you know, and this is the thing. Canada signed on to the United Nations Refugee Protection Act in, I think, 1952 or whatever that was, okay? You want to know something about this act where Canada and a whole bunch of Western nations signed on as we guarantee that we would take the refugees of the world? Yeah, guess who didn't sign on? Every fundamentalist Muslim nation. So we're responsible for their immigrants, and they're responsible for nothing. Yeah. And this is the foolishness and idiocy. And, you know, while you're talking about how the priority goes to the immigrant, you know what? There's a very specific piece of legislation that triggered that. And who founded it? Trudeau, Pierre Trudeau, the Multiculturalism Act of 1988. Okay, now it was passed when Mulroney was prime minister, but it's really not the point. Multiculturalism is Pierre Trudeau. He is the innovator, the originator of globalism in some ways. And multiculturalism, as it was called then, is really globalism now. So really, who really turned it upside down and made the third world Canadian more important and relevant than the Anglo-Canadian? You know who did it? A French Canadian, Pierre Trudeau. He's not Anglophone. It's us who get screwed. And Justin came in and did the same thing. Messed over the Anglophone. He's not an Anglophone. He couldn't even be a Christian. If he's a Christian, Obama bin Laden should have been elected Pope. I mean, there's nothing Christian in his behavior. Nothing.
Justin Trudeau is
so here we see.
Well, Justin Trudeau is an entity from hell, Brad, is what he is, okay? He is a very, very evil man. What he has done to our society. Well, there's no denying. Anybody that would want to lower the age for consent on anal sex. I mean, my God, folks, what kind of person is that? He's a sodomite, and a sodomite is not a good person. I don't care what people do in their lives, Brad. That's up to them. Okay? People do whatever they do, but a sodomite is a sodomite, and I don't care. You got to call a pig a pig. You can put lipstick on it, but it's still a pig. This man has done more to morally corrupt our society than any prime minister in Canadian history, bar none.
Absolutely, there's no question. He's just getting started.
Did
you bring up? Yeah, I mean, I won't go on about this, but you brought up about this lowering of the age for, you know, that kind of intercourse. And now, it just shows how absurd it is. Okay, he did this pretty much out of the gate, I think, or it could have been 2016. Now, you know, we're talking about time democracy is hereby canceled, so this. It's not like that now, but when bills are being passed and legislation's being passed and presented, okay, and these bills on a regular basis are presented to Parliament and on all kinds of different issues, many critical. So the Trudeau government, for some reason, decides that lowering the age from 18 to 16 is somehow a critical social issue in Canada. Well, Justin and you guys, who came to you and lobbied for that? Who asked for it? Who even cared? Who? What groundswell? What mandate? What? Where does this come from? You just made it up and felt that you should be spending your time with this 18 to 16 year old reduction in age here. I mean, what are you doing? Why do you do it, Justin? Why are you wasting time like this? And doing something that, let's say, about 0.0001% of the population care about, or some minuscule element of the population care about it? No one gives a damn, Justin. You know,
no.
But they did it.
It's all about undermining the morality of our society, and we look what's going on with the sex education.
Well,
you look at what's going on in our schools, the sex education programs, the gender confusion that's been put
into
it. Look at the World Health Organization, Brad, just came out and recommended as a universal school program where they want to teach four-year-olds masturbation. I mean, my God, folks, what's going on in our world?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's a communist invasion. Like, in my opinion, LGBT is globalism. LGBT is no, to me, is it's the same. It's the same. LGBT is a really sketchy area that the media, again, have only presented as some kind of walk in the park. Is it a walk in the park if a father, and this is a true case in British Columbia, his daughter, I think she was, well, 16 maybe, 14, 16, 14, a girl decided she wanted to change to a boy. Well, the father, needless to say, was not happy, and he fought against it. Okay, he fought against it. He lost. He got slaughtered. The court decided that if he, what was it, if he interfered with the sexuality of the child, he would be taken away, I think, forever, like he'd never see her again. And this is our court system. Liberal, not liberal, fascist, LGBT fascism.
Yeah, that court case you're talking about in British Columbia, Brad, I just don't know. I don't have the words to describe my disgust and what's going on in the court system.
You know what?
It's NDP.
Worse.
It's NDP, Brad. We don't need to say any more. I know it's worse than that. You're only touching the top of the iceberg right now. Go ahead.
Sure. I would just say, but not, you know, specifically, but in terms of LGBT, you know, that another piece of insanity from Justin Trudeau when they asked him, you are you a believing God, whatever it is? No, I'm a believing Christian. Justin says he's a believing Christian, okay? How many believing Christians do you know that promote mass abortion on demand with no term limit? In other words, you could have the abortion. People listening, I don't know how they're going to feel about this, but, you know, to put it in an extreme form, you can have an abortion at full term, 9 months, legally, yes, you can, and Justin Trudeau, seems to have no problem with that at all. He also didn't have any problem when the issue came up of young people getting transgender surgery and being rendered sterile and being shot with conversion therapy drugs that are not endorsed by the FDA, in fact. Didn't have any problem at all with these younger folks getting gender reassigned. Now that's very Christian of you, Justin. You sent $1 billion to Africa to have mass abortion in Africa in countries where abortion is illegal. Nicely done, Mr. Christian. I mean, you know, and look at the situation with Islam and how he's promoted that and how he said cut off funding for Christian Bible camps. So the nice Bible camp out in the countryside, that where they read the New Testament and stay in cabins or whatever for the summer. Yeah, they lost their funding from the government because they wouldn't sign a document that said, we agree with mass abortion, no term limit.
Yeah.
These are Christian Bible camps, churches in small town Canada.
Where are they? Why aren't they screaming at the top of the lungs about what's going on in this country?
They don't scream. They don't because they don't scream. And here's a fundamental problem in this regard, okay? Within Islam, religion and politics are linked. They are united, indelibly linked. In Christianity, politics and religion are separate. And in that simple example, in my opinion, that is the death of Christianity in Canada, and Justin will kill it.
Amen. Hey, Brad, we are down to the last minute here, bud, so I'm going to let you make a quick closing comment, and I'm going to have to let you go. I've enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for sharing your thoughts today. Hello, Brad. Oh, did I lose you again? Oh, I'm not hearing him. I don't know. Are you hearing him, Steve?
Nope.
No.
He's still in the call.
Well, I know he's still on the call, but we're not hearing him. Well, give him a few seconds here. If not, I'll have to shut the show for the week, guys.
Well, you can say goodnight or something.
Yeah, I know. It's just too bad. I wanted to give him his last closing thoughts. Well, it looks like we're not getting audio from Brad here, folks. So thanks, Brad, for joining me today and sharing some of your thoughts. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. I do have Mr. Vinny Eastwood coming in next week, and we're going to talk about what's going on in New Zealand and Australia. So please tune in. I'll see you all next week, same time, same place. God bless you all, and have a great week. Bye for now.
listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com. Seeking solutions.